Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Well, Larry Hughes is going to pop out and get the ball. Jordan's going to rub his man off of Leitner and then cut down the center and gets a nice pass from Larry Hughes.
Long rebound, Hughes. Fake jumper is good.
Give it to me, Larry. Give it to me, Larry Hughes.
Welcome into another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. I'll be joined in a minute here by Ryan Oliver of the Hoopin' with Roe podcast. But before we get to it, I just want to do a quick little Capital City Go-Go update. I think everybody's been saying that they've been interested in hearing a little bit more about the Go-Go. And since no one else seems to cover them, just here's a little quick recap. So after winning their first two games at home, they've hit a little bit of a skid since then. They're 3-3 overall, just got blown out by Maine, the Red Claws, which is sort of not ideal. It just looked like one of those games where they just kind of weren't there from the start. Nobody really made shots. Actually, Isaiah Todd had a reasonable game. They played two games against Maine, one close, again, had to make a comeback. But that's kind of been their theme. It's just like getting down early and then having to dig their way out. And three of those six games, they've done that. And the other three, well, two of them, they got close and weren't as lucky. And then this most recent game, like I said, was kind of a blowout. But Jordan Goodwin still leading the team with 20 points per game. The shooting has really cooled off, unfortunately. He's down to about 30% from three, and that really is the swing skill from him. He's averaging 7.5 rebounds a game, three-ish assists, 3.5, something like that. So that's pretty good. He hits a ton of steals, almost three a game. Turnovers, not great, almost a 1-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio, but he really isn't a pure point guard for him. So it's going to be the other thing he kind of needs to develop over time. But he is a big, athletic kind of combo guard. So if he can make shots, I think he's an NBA player at some point. Cassius Winston has come back and played the last four games. He's only started one of those games so far, averaging 13 points, two rebounds, three assists, 3.5 turnovers. So also a slightly negative assist to turnover ratio, which isn't ideal from your point guard. He's averaging 1.5 made threes a game on about five attempts, which is basically just a little over 25%, which is also not what you want to see. Probably the most balanced player in the roster so far has been Joel Ayayi, averaging 12.5 points per game, six rebounds, six assists, and again, three turnovers. I think that's sort of been the story of their season, is just sort of sloppy play and not really being able to get people in the right spots and set everybody else up to be successful. But Ayayi is shooting a much better percentage than those guys, although on pretty limited volume. He's about 60% from the field, which is really great, whereas Cassius Winston's about 35% from the field. And Ayayi's about 38.5% from three, which you can live with. Jaime Echenique, 11.7 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game, almost two blocks a game, really good. The problem here is, again, field goal percentage, under 50% from the field for a traditional back-to-the-basket center. Not really what you want to see. He is not a threat to space the floor in any way, shape, or form. So for him, he's got to have to be hyper-efficient around the rim to have any chance at being a real NBA player at any point. He's been good at the G League level at defending the rim. I don't know that he's athletic enough to have that translate to the NBA particularly well, but he is a big body. Maybe he could play some spot minutes. To me, he's sort of a best case scenario Anjis Pashasneeks part two. Unfortunately, the guy everybody I think wants to hear about is Isaiah Todd. So Todd averaging 11.5 points per game, about six rebounds, about 1.5 assists, 1.2 blocks. He's been super versatile for them defensively. I've heard, you know, some, hey, he's Rashard Lewis comparisons. And I don't know that it's that. I mean, I literally sat after two specific Wizards home games where he got shots up after, and the guy was just clanking free throws, clanking threes. It wasn't pretty. He has shot reasonably well in games as of late. He's about 34.5% from three on the season on about six attempts, but he's about 40% from the field, which is not, again, ideal for a guy who's 6'10" and more athletic than just about half the people, at least, that guard him. So need him to be better. The other one that's sort of surprising that hasn't shot the ball, Jordan Shackle, out of San Diego State, on almost seven attempts per game. He's making about 25%, averaging about 11 points, four rebounds. That's about it for him, which is, again, not ideal. Greg Monroe come in and is averaging about 7.5 and 7.5. Pretty effective, I guess, but again, not very efficient. So under 40% from the field for Greg Monroe, which is not what you want to see from a veteran, almost 7-foot player in the G League. Kyrie Walker, been a little bit of a mixed bag, kind of inconsistent minutes, I would say, at this point. For Walker, he's averaging about 8 points a game, about 2.5 rebounds, less than this half an assist, and 1.2 turnovers per game. Again, there's been moments. Like, there's some flashes there. Like, Kyrie has potential, clearly. But when you just don't play for 2.5 years or whatever it's been, it's going to take you a while. And I've seen some complaints on Twitter about, you know, he's their best player. Why are they not giving him minutes and stuff like that? It's just, you got to be cautious like that. And it's teaching a guy high-level advanced concepts. They're trying to run and do the same things that the Wizards do, and they're going to try to hold them as accountable defensively. And Todd runs around like a chicken with his head cut off sometimes, but he's switchable. He's been guy, you know, willing to challenge people to rim and be put on a poster if that may be the case. So you're just going to need to see more from Kyrie as time goes on, and I think he'll do that. He seems like a really good dude and humble about it, and looks to be working hard. So I think the minutes will come. He's only playing about 14 a game so far, but you know, we'll just see. Again, it's only been 6 games. They play a 30-some game schedule, I want to say. I'd have to double-check that. Their next home game is Friday, the 28th. Forget who they are playing, but they are back in the entertainment and sports arena. Games are affordable. Good to take the family to. So something for you guys to consider. All right, now that we got that out of the way, let's also get a word from our sponsor, Bet Online. It's Thanksgiving, and we all know what that means, football. And nothing goes better with football than turkey and betting. BetOnline has you covered all holiday season, more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports betting action you need this Thanksgiving. So head on over to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus with the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your bonus. And it's not just football. BetOnline has pro and college hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Vegas casino games. So don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. All right, and with that, let's get to the actual meat of the podcast here, our Thanksgiving episode. All right, welcome back. I'm joined right now by Ryan Oliver, host of the Hoopin' with Roe podcast. Ryan, you're one of my favorite people to do a podcast with, so I'm glad that we made this work out.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for having me. You know, I'm always happy to pod with you. You're my favorite person too, so let's get to it, man.
I love it. So it's not as fun to do these after a loss, especially a loss that most people didn't want to be a loss. Like, it's, you know, it's one thing if like the Warriors or the Nets beat you, like you can rationalize that. But I think everybody thinks that the Wizards are better than the Hornets. So it's one that they expected to win. It was a 109-103 loss. Again, kind of fell apart a little bit in the third quarter here. And it just, there was some weird stuff going on in this game. Like, the Wizards out-rebounded the Hornets by 31. But they couldn't make a shot. The Wizards finished 9 of 36 from three. Charlotte finished 15 of 31 from three, but also Charlotte missed like 10 free throws too. So like, if the Wizards could have won this game if they made a few shots, or the Hornets could have blown them out if they'd have made a few free throws. So like, this was just a very weird one to kind of gauge. I just want to get your take on that game overall.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it was a weird game, because you would feel like if you won the rebounding advantage by that much, that would obviously give you a significant advantage towards winning the game. I felt like LaMelo Ball took over the game in a lot of ways. And obviously Terry Rozier had, I think, 32 points. So that was a big difference. I feel like this is a game where my frustrations with Bradley Beal kind of come out, because I feel like you should be the best player on the floor in this situation. And to me, he was the third best player on the floor after LaMelo, Rozier, and then Beal. And if you're going to be...
You could make a case for fourth. I mean, Harrell's really good in this game.
Oh, yeah. You're totally right about that. So Harrell's actually better than him too. So to me, it's unacceptable when you have guys that have never been to an all-star game being better than your all-star. And it's not just he had an off night. This has kind of been the story of the season so far for Beal. And we've been winning as a team despite kind of a slump that he's been in shooting-wise. And as a lot of Wizards Twitter has talked about, this has kind of been a thing for Beal for a while now. His 3-point shot has kind of escaped him. And the team as a whole can't shoot, you know, consistently. I know Bertans is out and that doesn't help. But, you know, it just kind of is a detriment when your team can't make an outside shot. And your star player, who is known for shooting, at least he had been known for shooting, has really struggled. And to me, this is, you know, I know I'm not the biggest Beal guy, you know, out of the Wizards fan base. I really kind of cooled on him, and I don't want to even be a Debbie Downer, but I just feel like these are the games that bother me a little bit, because I'm like, this is the game we're at home where you got to step up and kind of, when the team is icy a little bit, we need you to step up and be that guy. And you can't be getting outplayed by, it's one thing to get outplayed by LaMelo because he's a really great player, but Rozier is hot and cold. You can't get outplayed by Rozier. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's funny, like, the defense was a little less than stellar, you know, compared to how it had been, especially perimeter defense. They gave up a lot of like open threes too, especially right. to Rozier. I think he made 8, and I would say at least half of them were without a defender within, you know, 5 or 6.
Oh, feet. He was wide open. I mean, Terry Rozier is going to knock those in, especially if you let him make the first few. He's going to keep knocking them in. You can't just leave them wide open. And a lot of them are just wide open shots, to your point.
Like you said, a streaky guy like that, you just can't give him a chance to get in rhythm. Now, if LaMelo is going to hit a 35-footer or wherever he pulled up for from one of them, like, okay, you know, more power to the guy. Yeah, the Beal's an interesting one. Like, I saw a lot of hate online for Daniel Gafford and how his hands are bad and he gets killed inside, which I still don't understand how people think that, because there are no numbers to really point to that. And then it's been cool, like, it become trendy to just, like, trash Dinwiddie for everything here when they lose games. And I do have some stats that are not Dinwiddie favorable, I'd say. In wins, he's averaging 18.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5.7 assists, 57% true shooting percentage. And in losses, he's around 9, 4, and 5 with a 42% true shooting percentage. So, like, you know, when he's bad, they do lose. Like, you can't afford for him to be that bad. But I don't think Beal should be able to kind of escape this one scot-free. Like, it looked like he was trending in the right direction. I want to say one of the Miami games, he was like particularly good. And then, you know, it's kind of an egg for the most part. Like, he wasn't terrible in this game, I guess, but like, to your point, he didn't take it over. This wasn't the Boston game last year where he dropped 60 and tried to keep them alive single-handedly. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the ball. I don't know if it's all this stuff. You know, what do you attribute Beal's sort of sluggish shooting, scoring start to?
Well, I do think his form looks different than it has in past years. And I feel like a lot of times the shot is kind of, he's pushing it almost. It doesn't seem fluid like it did in past seasons. And I noticed that even during his high scoring seasons, that sometimes his shot, like in the past couple seasons, his shot didn't look as fluid as it once did. I don't know what to attribute that specifically to. This season, to me, he doesn't seem to have the same just comfort shooting the ball. It just looks different to me. I can't even fully explain it. And I don't know if I'm articulating myself well, but I feel like it just looks different. And it just feels frustrating to me in this way, Matt, because he turns over the ball in big moments and he likes to play hero ball in big moments. And those are things that at times last year I attributed to Scott Brooks, and in past years, okay, Scott Brooks doesn't really have them running sets and stuff, which is true. He didn't have them running sets. But with Coach Unseld, I feel like the coaching's clearly been better, but some of the same habits that Beal has have reared their ugly heads. And the turnovers kill me. Like, if you're going to be the big money top 15 player, this, you can't keep doing it. You know, players are going to make mistakes. LeBron's turned the ball over. Curry's turned the ball over. Harden turns the ball over. KD sometimes too. Everyone does it if you're that type of player. But it just seems like every time Beal needs to make a big play, he does the dribble and he loose handle, loses the ball, and it ends up being a big play for the other team. And that's just killer. And it's killer. And it's really frustrating as a fan, because clearly that's not, that to me, those are moments where Spencer Dinwiddie is actually probably a better bet, because he seems to hit those clutch shots at a higher rate than Beal, and he seems to be more of a steady ball handler, less turnover prone than Beal too.
It's interesting, and I totally agree with you there. Like, he just can't have the play where he dribbles off the side of his foot. Like, I'd be okay with the hero ball, to be honest. Like, if he gets a shot up, at least it gives you an opportunity to rebound it and do something with it. Or if he was trying like too hard to force a pass and create a look for someone else, I could live with that too. But yeah, you just can't have like the sort of fully wasted possession. And Wes Unseld got asked about this post game a little bit, and it said, you know, this is about not valuing possessions. And he said, it's not just the turnovers, but being disorganized and out of sync. When plays, quote, break down, we just stop and stand. And then he pointed to everybody else's effort in those situations. He said, we have to fight through the disease of me and fight through it. So there were a lot of like sort of subtexty shade throwing quotes from this game, which is why I really wanted to kind of break this one down. But, you know, I'm not saying that's like directed at Beal directly or anything like that, but there is a lot of ball watching, and that was a Scott Brooks thing. That's been a thing this year too. And, you know, I don't know if that's just how you look next to a high usage player like Beal, and until he can kind of create for somebody. I don't know if it's easier for Dinwiddie because they can't help off of Beal to like double him the way they seem to, you know, like collapse on Beal. Like, it's just been, I don't know, it's been hard to watch, but I do think whatever it is that Beal just has to be better. Like, this is just kind of that straightforward for a guy that's set to earn as much money as he's set to earn. Like, if you pay him like a top 10 guy, he has to be a little closer to a top 10 guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I could go down a rabbit hole with the Beal contract situation. I know, like, you and I have discussed this in the past, and I've always been in the camp, especially in past years, of trading him, because I just don't see the top tier talent that's worth tying your cap down to like the $40 million plus contracts. I mean, we just saw what happened with Wall. Beal doesn't have the same injury history as John Wall does. And I think you want to enjoy this great season so far that we've had. And so I'm not even trying to, you know, poo-poo it or anything like that. I just think long-term, the mistakes Beal makes in these situations just make me think, man, like tying down a Supermax contract, tying so much of the cap up in this one guy, I don't see a transcendent player. I see a all-star, which is perfectly great. All-stars aren't easy to come by. So this isn't to say that's not good enough. It's just to say, like, if you watch LaMelo affected the game in every way. He was controlling the pace. He was rebounding. He had 13 rebounds. He was passing. He had 7 assists. And he was scoring. He had 28 points. He affected the game in so many different ways that I feel like you could feel him, even when he was missing shots early in the game, you could feel his impact. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when Beal has, he'll have 25, 5-5, and I don't always feel it. And sometimes that's the difference to me between a transcendent star and just a high level all-star. And look, Beal is a high level player. So this isn't a knock on Beal. I know Wizards fans are probably going to be coming for me for even saying this stuff, but I really just feel like if Beal wants to be that guy, the all NBA supermax type, he can't let games like what happened in Charlotte consistently happen, which they do happen quite often with the turnovers at the end, with kind of not taking over in those moments. And you can't be the fourth best player on the floor, and especially not after Terry Rozier and Montrezl Harrell. You know what I mean?
I'm with you. I just think it's about expectations or even what your goals are, right? So if you're trying to build an eventual championship level team, I just don't think you can do that if Beal is your best player, unless you get really lucky with like some guys on rookie deals that are like almost as good. You know, you can get a LaMelo Ball on that kind of contract or something. But, you know, if you're just trying to build like a really solid team that can be a 4-6-7 seed kind of as the cap, I think that's fine. And to be honest, based on what we've seen from Ted Leonsis, like, I think that's going to be more than enough from him. So I don't think there's any scenario where they do trade Beal, to be honest, like, unless he came out and said, I'm definitely out of this place, which I don't think he'll do. But just to your point about the money, his 5-year max next summer might be even larger than everybody expected. Looks right now like a 5-year sort of max deal for Beal would be for 241.6 million. So it would start at 41.7 and go all the way up to 55 million by the 26-27 season, which he'd have a player option for. But
and he'd be about 33 years old in that year, correct?
Yeah, 33 or 34. What's Beal, 28 now? So I mean,
I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be mid-30s by that, and you're giving him $55 million. So I think this is one of the situations where, like, if you trade him from a good team, you'll never recoup enough value to do it. But if you keep him, you're hamstringing. Like, I don't know. I didn't like the idea as much when they had another guy on a Supermax deal. I know Beals isn't technically a Supermax, but the equivalent of But I feel a little bit better about giving him $44 million when you have all the other guys on the deals they have. And you just have to be better about the deals on the fringes. Like, you have to be able to get Harrell back for a team-friendly deal. You have to do something with the Bertans contract, whether he plays his way into recouping value for that or you ship him out for parts. Like, I don't know. It just, your margin for error gets much smaller if you have Beal locked into this for that amount of time. And Beal's been relatively healthy for the last several years, but this is a guy that had like leg and lower body injuries early in his career. So like, is he going to be able to do a LeBron and play till 40 at a high level? Like, I don't know. So it's tough. Like, I'm not suggesting they trade him, but I think we ride this out and we just enjoy the ride. I've enjoyed most of the season, but it is sort of worth talking out what that does for you long-term, I think.
Well, let me say this. So I think that they missed the window to trade him.
Yeah, agree.
In my opinion, I was saying this. This is back when like Dwight Howard was on the team, where I was really kind of beating the drum saying, okay, like we have this 26-year-old star rising. He's only getting better. And this is before his like 30-point-per-game seasons, you know, that type of thing. And I thought, you know, the Lakers were a team that, you know, this is back when they had like, you know, Ball and Ingram and Hart and picks and stuff. I said, okay, look, I'm not saying we'd be in a better spot. I don't know. I would be lying to say I'm sure we would be in a better spot or whatever. I just look at the situation and I think Beal is a very good but not great player. I think that most rational people objectively could agree on that he's not that upper echelon elite player. I'm talking about the Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, LeBron tier of players. He's not in that tier. Now, you could argue, you know, is he right below it? So let's say he's right below it. I get the perspective that some people have, and you see Wizards fans say this, well, you can't just trade him and you know, there's no guarantee. You could be stuck in purgatory like the Kings are for 15 years. And that's a fair, valid point. Or like the Timberwolves, where you have Cat and you have nothing else and really going for you. You could definitely be in that situation. But I look at the team right now. What has led to our success of this team right now? Has it been having a high level star, or has it been having a bunch of competent professional players that are well coached? It really hasn't been because of Beal that the team's been so successful this year. Now, does it help having Beal? Of course. Again, not saying it doesn't help. I'm saying the most important thing about a professional team that we're seeing, one of the most important things, is having competent professionals that can play basketball.
Adults like in the room.
And Bongas and, you know, these other, like, those aren't NBA players. Having real NBA players, and a lot of them, that's the reason the Wizards have been so successful and they're well coached. So to me, look, they're better with Beal than without him. Not saying they're not, but I just feel like looking back that if they had made that move, and then, you know, maybe some of these moves like we've seen with Wall and turning in the assets, who knows what the team could look like right now? We have no idea. We could have a bunch of young stars on the rise. Or we could not. You just don't know. But I think it's too far gone. And I definitely think we're on the path to paying Beal that big contract. And we kind of have to accept that for what it is. I enjoy having Beal in DC. I'm not trying to kick him out DC. I just think that that window was worth exploring more than the Wizards really did. And, you know, we're going to kind of be stuck with the max, you know, max contract for Beal Supermax. And we'll have to just see if they can make those moves on the fringes. How does Rui develop? How does Denny continue to develop? And some of these pieces around him. But the team has been so enjoyable this season that I'm not complaining. I just want to see some good basketball at this point.
To your point, though, you've put a cap naturally on how good a team can be if you lock that player into that much money. I think that's all we're saying. So everybody, if you have got your pitchfork ready right now and you're going to, you know, like riot on our houses for saying this, that's not what we're saying.
And let me say this too real quick. I see people will pitch these like, oh, well, you know, do you think we could get Tatum in the future? Or like, do you think we could get, Kat or like, and I'm just like, what are our assets? I like Denny. Sure. I like Rui just as much as the next guy. And you know, I wasn't a big Denny guy at first. And I really come around and really enjoy him as a young prospect. So this is, and could be a Kispert and that type of thing. But if I'm trading you Kat, I need more than Rui, Denny, and Kispert. Like I need
all our picks for forever. Go with that.
Yeah. So I just don't know how you take that next step from, okay, we have Beal on the Supermax, we have Dinwiddie as a complimentary, you know, maybe like high level role player, let's say. How do we take that next step? Because for as good as Montrezl Harrell is, and his defense has been better, and I really like Montrezl Harrell.
Yep.
Montrezl Harrell is a player that in the playoffs is going to be a whole different story. I'm telling you. And once we get to the playoffs and he's going against LaMelo Ball every, you know, in a series, or he's going against, you know, Harden or somebody in a series, they are going to pick on him every single time in big moments. And he's undersized and he's not going to be able to stay on the floor the same way. He might be serviceable on defense and he's playing well this season. Mm-hmm. I'll give him credit. But in the playoffs, it's a different animal. And I think that his size and lack of, I don't know, just rim protector skills comes in play in those settings. So I just wonder how you take that next step, like to your point. And I just don't see that next star that realistically could join in with the team and how we would take it to that next step besides being a mid 40 win team, most likely. Cause you know, this team feels like a 45, 46 win team at this juncture.
I think the real thing that's concerned to me about the concerning is, again, too strong a word, but the thing you have to be mindful of with the Beal stuff is you've given him so much cachet with what you do, and Harrell is his boy. If they lowball Harrell and he's not back, how does Beal take that next year when KCP's up for his next deal and their boys? Like, I don't know. Do we end up with like overpays for some of these guys because these are the guys Beal wants and he has pull with what they try to do? So those are all the things that I hope that they stand firm on. And here's our market that we can afford. Or, you know, if Ted is suddenly willing to go into the tax for some of these things, like, okay, maybe that's a little bit of a different story. So anyway, these are all just things to be mindful of. It's a lot of money. There were some things that Beal said that the only thing he does that actually really tweaks me, like I can live with missing shots. I don't even expect him to be like an all-world defender here. But the quote that he does in post-game sometimes where like guys need to play with more energy drives me batshit insane. Like, we need to play with more energy is fine. But guys, like it just seems like there's some shade being thrown there. So a couple quotes from Beal from this post game. He did say, at times we get complacent and we think we can flip the switch on, and talked about how the offense gets stagnant and people ball watch. So it was largely what Wes Unseld said, but he threw in the words, you know, we get complacent. And they've said that a couple times already. If you're 11-6 and you haven't done shit for like multiple years, it's concerning to me that you think there's some switch you can flip. Like, it's too early in a year for a team that hasn't done anything. And these guys have been good collectively because they've had a chip on their shoulder. So that doesn't really like line up with the we get complacent mindset to me. That's a big red flag, I think, that we're saying that kind of shit this early in the year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I definitely get tired of hearing that too. You know, sometimes I honestly attribute some of the post-game quotes to like guys not knowing what to say about a loss. Right. I really do think that. Yeah, I think that sometimes, you know, I know you're like on these Zooms and stuff, you know, as a member of the media, but sometimes when I hear these post-game quotes, I think, did Beal just not know what to say here? Yeah. Like, because it does get tired when you hear the same thing like year after year, when like after losses, like guys need to play harder. You know,
someone coaching him on like the PR team side, like maybe don't say guys, like, I don't know. I would think that'd be something they'd steer him away from.
This is the same guy that like did the super anti-vax, commentary. So he's kind of lost me with any expectation of like
PR savvy,
yeah. You know, PR savvy. Yeah. It's clearly like that wasn't ideal. But I feel like sometimes guys just don't know what to say about a loss. Like, hey, we came out flat tonight. And then, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, guys didn't have energy and this and that. It's like, what I would like to hear from Beal is I'm the head of the snake and I didn't have the proper energy. And, you know, the guys, you know, maybe fed off of my lack of energy and I could do a better job of getting them going. I think as a star player, you know, one thing I always liked about John Wall is John Wall would like face the media. He didn't know, he would always speak his mind. It wasn't always to the
Westbrook did that last year too, to be fair. Yeah, like, he always kind of took that.
I can appreciate that when the star player faces the media and will take accountability or just tell us the truth, you know, about what's actually going on. I think Beal could use some of that, even if it wasn't really your fault. Damian Lillard will do this too. He'll say, you know, well, I'm the leader of the team, so I didn't do enough. Clearly, you know, that's why we lost. Or, mm-hmm. or even when you look at the box score and he had like 40 points and no one else did anything.
If I had 50, we'd have won. Yeah.
Right. So I think that Beal could take some of that and just say, hey, like, you know, we didn't have the energy, but I, you know, I'm the head of the snake and that responsibility falls on me. But to your point about they had a chip on their shoulder, and that sense of urgency they played with, and that has led to their success. I agree. And we've heard that complacency thing a couple of times now, like after the Brooklyn loss, that was a thing. And you could tell they did look kind of lack of energy, lethargic. And you wonder.
Toronto was the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you wonder what, you know, what contributes to that feeling, because West doesn't seem like the type that would tolerate that. Like Scott Brooks seemed really passive, but West doesn't. I don't get that vibe from him. I think teams have off nights. I think in Charlotte, they just dropped the rope. And I think that Charlotte's one of those teams where if you let LaMelo Ball get going and he gets that confidence in the shot to like that it's falling, it just, you know, catapults the rest of his game. He's already going to rebound. He's already going to pass. Same with Rozier. He had at least six wide open threes, and he had six wide open ones, and he made a bunch. And if you let guys like that get hot, I think that it just snowballs into, okay, now we're behind the eight ball. Now we got to try to come back. And then the comeback ends up, you end up expending so much energy just trying to draw the game close that, you know, you end up losing in the end. But I think the accountability needs to be there from Beal. And I think that sometimes you can just say, like, look, we had an off night. Like, we didn't play well in that third quarter. Yeah. I don't know why guys can't just say that. Sometimes it's honestly that simple and plain that, you know, maybe, you know, I know Wes said they got out coached. That's honest and that's transparent, you know. And I think that's refreshing to hear that, because sometimes that is just the God's honest truth. Like, you know, James Borrego, Hornets coach, he outcoached me tonight. Like, and that's on me. Like, I gotta be better for my guys. And I think as a fan base, I can respect honesty. It just can't keep happening. But I can respect the honesty because it's going to happen from time to time.
82 games a year, you're not going to make better adjustments than the other professional coach that you play of a soon to be playoff team. So I'm with you. I do think it's a bit of a, like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Like if they say like, yeah, we were just like, we didn't have it tonight, then we're probably sitting here being like, well, why didn't they have it? Like, so, I think there's some of that. You know, Beal did talk about how they have to be more consistent, not dig themselves into a hole. He put that on the starters specifically. And he said that it's an energy drain for them when they have to keep making these comebacks. And Harrell said kind of the same thing about how they get into a mindset of like, we get down and then we think we have to make it all back on one possession. And that leads to some of this hero ball. And I thought that was like a very relevant point, because there are a lot of times where like, okay, they're down 10 and now all of a sudden they just shoot three after three after three. And it's like, okay, like maybe chip away at it a little bit, maybe keep feeding the ball into the post some. So I do give them a little bit of a break. And you made a great point there too, Ryan, about like, sometimes you're just not going to have it, like gonna have it for a game. And I think that's something we forget sometimes, like these are people. And two things kind of stand out. Beal said after that Miami game in Miami that they didn't get into Miami until 6 a.m. And that was after, you know, the beginning of a back-to-back in Charlotte. So they played a game, got in like in the middle, basically the next morning, and then played a game again that night. And they looked flat at that game in Miami. And that's going to happen. Like sometimes that stuff plays into it. And yeah, you're pro players or whatever, but like you're still a human being with a certain amount of energy available to you. And sometimes it's not going to be there. And I think the other thing is these guys, like it's human nature to be frustrated if you're routinely missing shots that have been good shots for you, right? So like, I'm not talking about like Beal being a little worse than he used to be at three, but like everyone on the team's percentage pretty much is down, and they're getting a lot of open looks and they're clanking them. I get it. Like sometimes you're just going to throw your palms up and be like, what the hell? Why can't I make that? And that's going to be frustrating to you. So I don't even know if it's so much like laziness or ball watching, but you know, it's something they got to fight through. But I understand that some nights that shit gets the best of you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all in all, the team has played well this year. You know, it's not, nothing is going to be perfect. And if we're honest, they don't really have a ton of elite offensive talent. They have a bunch of very good. I mean, I say Beal's very good and then solid all around, but it's not like we have Kevin Durant and James Harden and the offense is 20th. And you're like, how can we be 20th when we have these two top, you know, seven players or whatever you want to say Harden is. KD's obviously top two, but you know, if we don't have these, you know, I think that the fact that they have, I know the offense hasn't been great, but it's competent. And then they have a high level defense, which has been a surprise. I think that if before the season, you know, they told us, hey, we're going to be, you know, a top five team right now in the conference. We're going to be,
yeah, we'd all take it.
I don't know, like 18th on offense or whatever they are, and fifth on defense, I think we'd all be like, oh, okay, like sign me up right now for that. For sure. That seems solid. So I think that fans, I think when you get a little success early, I think fans get a little bit like, okay, like we're going to be the one seed now.
Yeah, we're the best team ever.
I think that, honestly, before the season, I honestly felt like they were going to be somewhere between, I thought their range was anywhere from 34 wins to 48. Like I thought they could be anywhere in that range and I wouldn't have been surprised. I think I personally leaned more towards about 500, but I felt like they could be anywhere in there. And I still think, if I'm being honest, they're more of a 45 win team than a 50 win team. Cause I think there's been some situations where they've, you know, won a game that we kind of got lucky on or came back and made a few big shots that could easily have not gone in or whatever, but it's been exciting. So I think that we have to, some night you're going to have nights that are frustrating, like the Hornets, and you're going to have nights that are exhilarating, like the Heat win. I think it's just the nature of this team, but hey, at least they compete. And like, that's a big step forward.
I'll take this. I'll take a whole season of this, even if it's a whole season of the Hornets game over what we saw the last like 2 years, basically. I appreciate that style of play better. Just a couple more numbers here. They're 20th in points per game, fifth in points per game, paint points per game, which is great. And does speak to people, you know, banging the drum for them to keep pounding the ball in the paint. I get it. To that point, it's one thing to say they need more paint touches, but also, if you're saying they should stop shooting threes, that's an idiotic take. Every NBA offense is built around creating good open threes. And if you've got a guy that's a career 38% three-point shooter and he's just missing them all, it doesn't mean that you didn't still create a good look for him. Eventually, those will go in. It will normalize. So like that, we got to calm down on too. I do want to see them run a little bit more. They're last in fast break points per game. Like I think we maybe went a little too far in the pace department too. And I think both Unseld and Beal pointed to that, getting themselves some easy shots and things like that to kind of grease the skids on offense, put pressure on a defense. 12th in field goal percentage, 25th in 3-point field goal percentage, 11th in free throw percentage, 9th in assisted turnover. And then, you know, 10th in rebounds, 13th in assists, like, you know, they're middle in the, like better than middle of the pack on some, but if you're fringe top 10 in a lot of categories and you're just not making open threes, like eventually that figures it out and you become a better team because of it. But just one other thing to throw in there that I thought was interesting from Beal. He said, look, the biggest adjustment when you have a new roster and a new coaching staff is always going to come on the offensive end. Figuring out offensive tendencies, getting used to each other. It's just not where we want it to be. It's a work in progress, but it could be worse, and says that everyone is trying their best to figure it out on the fly. Like, I think that's an honest, real take. And that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. Like, hey, calm down. We're getting there. We didn't have time to focus on offense in the preseason. We worked on defense. That clearly worked out. So just have faith that we'll figure the offensive stuff out too. Like, I'm very okay with that.
Yeah, I think that that's an honest assessment of where things are at. And that's kind of where things are at when you watch, it kind of seems to be true. I think sometimes we see these glimpses of a really hot, like competent, really good offense. And I think other times you see not. I think the pace is something that I think is really important. One thing that I would like to see is I feel like I want to see Gafford get utilized more in like the pick and roll situations. And like, I think that, you know, he doesn't play as many minutes as I was hoping he'd play this year. He's around 20 minutes a game. And I know his foul trouble can be a thing. And Harrell's played so well that you obviously want to, like, if Harrell's going to play like a, you know, a top 30 player, let's just say, like, you obviously want to give him minutes, and that's obviously, and they can't play together. So that obviously makes sense. But I think that long-term Gafford is the guy that you're still developing here. Like, yes, they need to win, but it's important for Gafford, Rui, when he gets back, Denny, Kispert to get these reps. And I've even seen people talking about Kispert, like, oh, he shouldn't be in the rotation. He shouldn't play. Like, he's not ready. And I agree that he's maybe not totally ready,
but I don't get him ready.
Yeah. But it's also like, if you watch Kispert, a lot of his mistakes are clearly like he's overthinking about what he's about to do. Like, he catches the ball, and instead of just shooting it, like he's
looks around three times.
It's like, he's like, oh, okay, like, should I shoot? Should I not? It's like, bro, just shoot the ball. Like, you're not shooting it well right now, but this is what you do. Like, and then, but he has good instincts. He'll catch the ball. He'll put it on the floor. He'll make, you know, try to make a play. I'm like, well, he needs these reps. If he's not going to play with the go-go, like clearly that hasn't been a thing yet. he needs to get these reps. I'm not mad at them running him out there for 10 minutes a night. Like,
yeah,
there needs to be a line towed here between development and trying to win. And Gafford needs those reps too. I really would like to see his minutes get up to around 25, 26, you know, more of an even split with Harrell, because I think that going forward, Gafford's a better defender and they need to unlock the pick and roll chemistry with him and Beal, with him and Dinwiddie. Even him and Advia, they need to unlock that for long term throughout the season. So that's something I would like to see, some development in that department. And also I'd like to see some different lineups, like in terms of or I shouldn't say different. I should say I'd like to see them go like five small with Advia and Kuzma more. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them play Advia and Kuzma at the three and the four more. I just would like to see Advia get more minutes, because him being an elite defender, and I like to see what he can do more as a facilitator on offense and letting Beal and Dinwiddie play off him. So I think there's just a lot of room for the offense to evolve. I know I just kind of hijacked that to what I would like to see, but I think there's a lot of ways that they can go, and I'm excited to see how they continue to develop, because the team's just been enjoyable to watch as a whole. And that's a giant step forward. And I think there's a lot of intricacies to the offense and the defense that we could see going forward, especially when they get Bertans and Rui, and I guess even Thomas Bryant back too.
Yeah. None of this is intended to be negative for anybody, by the way. This is they've been really good. Here's how they could be better.
Right.
And I think what you said about Gafford is such a great point, because I've seen a lot of people like, get this bum out of here, he can't catch. And like, this guy went from playing 7 minutes a game in Chicago 1 year ago to now where our expectation of him is that he's like a 15 and 10 guy with three blocks every game. Like, that's just not realistic. He's 24, I think, maybe 25 by now. Like, there's a lot of room to grow. He doesn't have like a ton of NBA mileage. Like, he should continue to get better. The conditioning needs to get better. The foul rate needs to get better. But early in the year, like, there were a lot of attempts and some of them very unsuccessful, but Dinwiddie was trying to do pick and rolls and throw lobs to Gafford. And like, I haven't seen them try to do much of that the last couple of games, to your point. Like, the vertical spacing would even help them, but they've sort of gone away from that. So all things, they're going to try a bunch of different stuff. I hope they come back to some of those things. And another really good point by you, Ryan, like, I think the versatility of this roster is probably one of the best things it has going for it. So throw some weird looks at people and make them adjust to you for a change, especially when Rui comes back. I would love to see a Denny, Rui, Kuzma front court and just be weird and switchy and, like, you know, match up with us now, like, chase us down the floor and just run super fast with that group and, like, let a traditional big try to keep up. Because Kuzma has been good enough defensively against other bigs that I think he could do it.
I was just going to say, to that point with that Rui, Kuzma, Denny lineup, is I think Denny and Kuz have been good enough defensively that you could justify that. And they've been rebounding at a level that's good enough to justify that. Like, Denny's like proven to be a pretty good rebounder. And obviously Kuzma's having like a career year rebounding the ball, like 8 or 9 a game. So to that point, Rui, you know, obviously isn't always a great rebounder. So I think maybe they could make up the difference there. But I definitely want to see that going forward, because I think when we get to the playoffs, you know, knock on wood, if things trend the way they're going, you're going to see teams go small. And Harrell and Gafford honestly might not get a ton of minutes. They'll play, don't get me wrong, sure. But like, you're
not 35. Yeah. In a playoff game.
Yeah. They're maybe not going to be exactly. So you're going to have to run those lineups where Kuzma's playing the five or Denny's at the five, whoever you want to say is the five. And you kind of have that quickness. But what I like about that is any of those guys could get the ball and push up court. And we've seen what Denny can do as a facilitator. And I would really want to see that more. Like, you get these glimpses of Denny on offense where you're just like, okay, like, this is the guy that was the playmaking for that, you know, was touted as in the draft process. And, you know, we actually did a mock draft, Matt, and you picked him. I remember he was got the best guy available at 9. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't see it. But I see these glimpses now. I'm like, okay, this is the guy that they were talking about. And you see, I mean, but his defense has just been so like absurd that,
and the rebounding's been a lot better too.
Yeah. And it's just been so exciting. But what the most exciting thing is to me is when he gets the ball in the post and then finds somebody, and I'm like, okay, like, that's something I really think that going forward we could see. And to the point about Gafford's age, he's only 23. Like, people need to pump the brakes. Like, I just looked up his age as we're on here. You need to pump the brakes. Like, he's going to have ups and downs because that's
even more than I thought. I was just like leaning toward 25. Like, 23 is nothing. You're basically a sophomore.
He was a second round pick. He was a 38th pick in the draft. Like, this is a guy that's exceeded expectations for his career already. Mm-hmm. And he was not even playing in Chicago a year ago, to your point. He's an amazing find, and I think we got to be patient with him. He's going to have games where he has the 20-9 rebounds and 2 blocks or whatever it was that one big game he had a couple games ago. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to have games where it doesn't look as great. I think that people just have to realize that this is a 23-year-old player, and just like Rui and Denny and Kispert, like, he's developing. Just, I think people think because he wasn't a homegrown draft pick, like, we didn't pick him, that, you know, it's like, oh, he should be a, you know, 15-10 guy. It's like he's learning on the job how to defend, how to, you know, be competent in the offense. So he's going to continue to evolve, and I think he's going to be fine. You know, is he going to be an all-star? No, but I think he'll be a good level starting center.
We've had multiple former Wizard centers on the show talk about how it took them until at least their third, if not fourth season, to understand how to try to anchor an NBA defense. So,
yeah,
I mean, he is in his whatever fourth season at this point, right? I mean, but he's barely played in some of them. So let's give him a little bit more room there before we're willing to like throw him out, you know, as like a lost cause and hate on the extension. Like, I don't know, give him more time with Wes Unseld. Like, yeah. I think Wes has shown that he can actually help beef up what a guy can bring to the table. So all really good points. At some point this season, if we ever get a Dinwiddie, Bertans, Rui, Hachimura, Kuzma lineup, or Avdija, Hachimura, Kuzma lineup, I'll be a very happy man. Larry made a point last week about like, it's a copycat league. So sometimes it's really good to zig when other people zag. So if you can just throw some weird shit out there and make them adjust to you for a change, I think that's to our benefit, and it makes you harder to scout. And you've shown these different looks that now people have to at least be somewhat prepared for. So it gives you, you know, more unpredictability, but look, they were 4-12 at this point last season. I mean, this is literally best case scenario. So I'm totally good with it. Ryan, just pivoting here a little bit. I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to do with this one is keep it a little bit kind of corny and light and positive and finish on a closed, you know, close on a good note here. It's Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners here. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. But let's do three things that we're thankful for, whether it's about this team, these any of the players, or just this season and this experience overall. So I will start us out if that's okay with you. I'm going to say Montrezl Harrell is the thing that I am most thankful for on this roster, to be honest. He's fun to watch. People just love energy. It's clear he's like the fan favorite in the building for these games, because every time he does anything or he shakes the rim on a dunk, people lose their shit. He's fourth in the NBA in win shares and first in individual offensive rating. I mean, that's insane, like insane. So kudos to Montrez. A couple things, like he's another guy that's like amazing post game. He talked about like his rebounding prowess is all about will and passion, and something he really takes pride in. Like, I just love everything about the dude and his attitude. So I am thankful for Montrez.
Absolutely. When that trade went through, obviously the trade with the Lakers for Russell Westbrook, he was the piece I was most excited about. And I even saw people, I remember people were kind of like, oh, should we move Harrell to a third team? Or like, should we? And I was thinking, have you guys watched us the past few seasons? He's exactly what the team needs. You need a guy that gives a shit off the bench. Like, mm-hmm. He's going to come in, he's going to play his ass off, and he's going to outplay other like bench lineups. So he's just going to feast in those minutes like he did, you know, when he was on the Clippers and like his six man of the year, that's all he did. He just took advantage of like a bad defense, you know, bad bench players and just dogged him. And so he's even doing against, you know, obviously he's playing a lot of minutes. He's playing against starters too, but it's just that energy, and it's so infectious on the team, and the crowd feeds off it. So it just allows for this feeling of energy to shoot through the building too, especially on home games. You need a player like that. You need a fan favorite. You need a person that really energizes the fan base and is exciting because he plays so hard. And I really think that that's what makes Montrezl Harrell such a joy to have on the team. So I'm thankful for him too.
Do you want to go next?
Yes. So I have here the progress that Denny Avdija has made in his game. I got a couple of stats too. This is from StatMuse. This is opponents are shooting 34.9% when guarded by Denny. That's the lowest mark in the league by any player with 150 shots defended. So he's just killing it. I mean, there was a play, I think he was guarding Gordon Hayward, I believe, last game, where Hayward did his normal little moves and Denny like just kept his hands up. He had a great footwork. I mean, he was with him the whole way. And then Hayward tried to go like under him and he blocked him. And I was just like, I literally had my, like my jaw open. I was like, wow, like that is some really disciplined defense. Like, I don't know who he got in the lab with this off season. I know he was recovering from his injury too. So like, I almost wasn't expecting the progress he's made, but he's taken like such big strides to looking like lost almost sometimes last year on defense to really becoming a lockdown wing defender. And like, Lord knows the Wizards have needed a lockdown wing defender for a long time. And now we have KCP, who's, I don't know if he's locked down, but he's a very good defender.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And Kuzma's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And now we have Denny, who like literally, I mean, he's putting the clamps, and those stats don't lie. He's putting the clamps on, you know, really good players like Gordon Hayward and other players like that who feel like they can attack him. He just, you know, anyway, I'm rambling. I'm just really excited about the progress he's made. I'm thankful for that.
It's like somebody made him do the drill in the offseason where you have to defend somebody with your hands in your pockets the whole time, because like the moving the feet and the positioning has been unreal. Question on that. Did StatMuse find some way to also throw shade at Russell Westbrook while making that tweet?
Oh man, StatMuse has really got a bone to pick with Russell Westbrook. I see a lot of people defending it like, oh, you guys got an agenda and this and that. I'm not going to lie, I find it a bit comical. Yeah. But I've been deemed as a Russ hater. The Russ stans have been in my mentions so many times at this point that I just stopped tweeting about them. But yeah, I find joy in it. It's funny to me. I guess it's because I'm still bitter about like all the times where he had a triple double last season and people were like, oh, he had a triple double and like we lost by 15. I'm like, I don't care.
My problem was never with Russ. It was certain people's handling of him and his production, you know, and hearing triple double alert on the broadcast 1,000 times.
Oh boy.
All right. So the next one I got here is just, and I've said this like a million times on the show over the last 2 months, so apologies to everybody for being a broken record, but I can't emphasize this enough. What just like good, interesting guys they all seem like. Like Dinwiddie had the thing where he was like advertising like the vegan water, the other, you know, like vegans, like drinks and like just, I got, just he's funny to listen to and it's unique stuff that you're not used to hearing. The Brad Beal, Montrezl Harrell, like tag team post games are always hysterical. When whatever a media member the other night asked KCP about the Lakers being a failure and he just like laughed about it. It's like, they're people, again, they're interesting people and they don't seem like dicks. And that just makes it so much better for me to like enjoy and root for.
Yeah, that's actually something I have here too. Just an enjoyable team. I find the team like fun to root for. I felt like last year's team for a bunch of reasons, not just Russ, for people think I'm hating, for a lot of group. Reasons. I found the team not that enjoyable. And I mean, if you look back to past years, I felt like the last couple like John Wall years were just a slog. And it, like, not blaming John Wall, I'm a big John Wall fan. It wasn't enjoyable as a fan. I felt like the last real season that was enjoyable was the season where they won 49 games, Scott Brooks' first year, I think.
Was that 14-15 with Ariza and company or the year after?
I think it was the year after Ariza when they had Otto and Otto had his best year and then got the next year after that, if I'm remembering correctly. And I thought that year was a lot of fun because the team just overachieved from expectation. And I feel like it's always fun when you kind of overachieve. Like this year, them, you know, getting off to such a good start. Like even if you had asked me, would at any point would they be the number one team in the conference? I mean, even at like 2-0, like I probably would have been like, nah. And to even, you know, be in the top five at this point is like, okay, like this is fun. Like I can watch every night. I've, you know, last year felt like a chore to watch. You know, I didn't enjoy it And this year it's been really fun just having a bunch of guys. I like the Harold chip on the shoulder. I like watching the young guys develop, and you see Denny making the progress, and you see, you know, when Kisper finally hits a shot, like, okay, maybe it's coming around, or that type of thing. Even seeing Gafford make his strides. So having an enjoyable team is like, I mean, you see the arenas popping for the first time in a while. So
it's popping with way less people too, like, which is crazy. I mean, obviously I think a lot of COVID implications there, but
sure.
that 14,000 sounds a lot louder than the last time they had 21,000 to me, at least. All right. The next one I have is just the Capital City Go-Go and the fact that they actually use them. Like, we might not have lottery picks again here for a while, which is actually, like, I don't know, someone that likes the draft is disappointing, but as someone who wants a good team, it's amazing. So the fact that they have somewhere where, like, they can groom potential, you know, future Wizards prospects is awesome. I love seeing what, like, Todd looks like from game to game. That's just very exciting to me personally. And it's been a mixed bag, but I don't know. It's just like something fun. And to your last point about, like, you have like some hope for them. And when they do something good, like, you get excited about it. So that's another one that I am thankful for. How about you?
Yeah, no, I'm thankful for that too. I want to say this, like, can we campaign for the Capital City Go-Go just to be the name of the actual
Wizards
franchise? Because that name is so much more endearing to the city. And, like, what is a Washington Wizard anyway? This is a whole tangent I know I'm about to go on, but anyway, I'll make it short. I just feel like the Capital City Go-Go is actually, like, a really cool name, and they did a good job. Why can't that just be the name of let's make the G League team the Wizards or something, and let's make the big team the Go-Go, and like actually embrace something that's, you know, that says something about our city, which is Go-Go music. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that was a cool name. Mm-hmm. And I look back, I'm like, how did they land on the Wizards? What is a wizard for Washington? Anyway,
for anyone that doesn't remember, the top three fan vote choices were Wizards, Dragons, and Sea Dogs. So of the three, I actually prefer Wizards of the three. What?
Is that factual?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the top three.
Wait, Dragons?
Yeah. And the other one was like, someone will remember this. I hope you please hear this and tweet us. But I want to say the fourth one was like the Express or something. You know, like, it was just something also kind of like, So
those are some bad. I didn't even know that. Those are terrible. Yeah. All of them. The Wizards, I guess, is the best of that group. But the Capital City Go-Go is actually like a cool name. And when I remember when I saw that name, like when they revealed it a couple of years ago, I was like, wow, like, that's actually like, whoever thought of that, like, bravo. Like, that's a cool name. Capital City and Go-Go go together. It's that's so much cooler. Anyway, I'm thankful for that. Let me ask you this about the Go-Go. How's Kyrie Walker look?
It's funny, like, right before we got on here, I did like a 2-minute here's your Go-Go update, and it's interesting. Like, he looked pretty okay in game one and just totally coasted in like 8 minutes in game two, and then they pulled him and never put him back in. So it's been like, again, kind of up and down. I said Todd's been a mixed bag, but even more so with Walker. Like, he just doesn't look like he understands where he's supposed to fit in yet, and it just seems like a total byproduct of, I have not played meaningful games in a team environment in a very long time. So I think there's enough flashes there to be like excited. And he seems to be, I think, trending in the right direction, but he's averaging like 8 points and 3 rebounds or something like that in like 14 minutes.
Is he a wing or is he a big, like, I know he's like, was like a kind of a high school, like, phenomenon type guy, sure. But like, never really knew what he was supposed to be good at. Like, what's his claim to fame?
So he was 6'5" coming into high school, and he said he's grown to about 6'7". Doesn't really look like that. Like, he doesn't look considerably bigger than like Joel Ayayi, who was like 6'4". Okay. But he's solid. Like, he's a thick dude. I think he's like a powerful jumper. And that was probably the thing. Like, you know, as a 6'4" freshman in high school or whatever he was, he probably just like physically overpowered a lot of people. But he's a wing, but he's not a great shooter yet. He's thrown a couple like crafty passes, so maybe he's got some vision there. And I think they talked a lot about them like working on his passing, but the shooting has got to be better. I mean, just it looked kind of like hitchy still, or I don't know, kind of wonky. But I don't know. He seems like a nice, humble young man. So I almost called him a kid, which I try not to do. But he is a lot younger than me, so to me, he's a kid. But Yeah, I don't know. I think he'll be interesting to see where he goes. I think it is probably to his benefit that they didn't give him a two-way out of the gate because the expectations would be really high. But there's been some flashes, is what I would say.
That's good. I guess that's all you can ask of, you know, that type of thing for the Go-Go's. So that's exciting too. My last thing that I had was a team that plays defense. It's just been enjoyable to have a team that doesn't just give up points so easily. Like the past, you know, few seasons, it's just like the team is in the bottom or like mid 20s or whatever in defense. And it was unenjoyable because no one could defend or no one tried. And it's enjoyable to see Beal try on defense and really kind of like take pride in that and to have guys that take it serious. I mean, look, if you want to be a better defensive team, you need better defensive players. And that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, I had advocated like even like them signing Torrey Craig last year. I was like, oh, look, that we need to get Torrey Craig if we can. And people were like, well, what's up? Like, he plays defense. Like, you just got to have competent defenders out on the floor if you want to have a competent defense. You can't have everyone be like a cone, a traffic cone, and expect it to be any good. So it's nice to have the KCPs and the Kuzmas and Denny take the strides and Gafford, because you have guys that really care. And I think when you have guys that care and it's been taught, it's being taught and preached, you get effort from guys that aren't always great defenders, like Montrezl Harrell, who clearly making an effort to say, all right, like, this hasn't been my strength, but like, let me at least make a really strong effort to be a good defender. And it's translated to like solid defense. He's done a good job this season. You got to give him credit for that. So that's really it. You know, for me, those are my three things. It's Denny's progress, an enjoyable team, and a team that plays defense.
Those are amazing. I think everyone would or should agree with those. Because it is the holiday here and I am sort of in an extra jolly mood, I'm going to be like super corny to finish it out. I'm like grateful for our fan base, because like it drives me nuts sometimes when people are like, Gafford had one bad game, cut him, wave him, or Avdija can't make a layup, we got to get rid of him. Like, we do overreact to things, but I get why we do it. We've been sort of a tortured fan base, I don't know, for a very long time. And, you know, that stuff adds up, and we deserve to have like this kind of team, I think, because you see all these polls, who has the best fan bases in the NBA and shit, and the Wizards are never listed in the top 10. And we're kind of slept on because attendance or whatever, but the people that do care, care a lot. And even if I think we maybe care too much sometimes, I'm still thankful for that. And I think it'll be so much sweeter when this team actually like wins something meaningful. Now you can sort of, it's a relative term what meaningful is, but you know, if this team is like competitive for an Eastern Conference Finals, like 2 years from now, like this fan base and this city will like explode. And I honestly, I can't wait to see something like that. So thanks everybody. And thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah. And DC is a place that we're just waiting for a winner. Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like if the Wizards were just like, let's just say they were a 50 win team, and that could be a 50 win three seed or a 50 win four seed. It doesn't mean you're the best team in the conference or anything. This city would explode. Like you said, just to have a high level competent team, that doesn't mean you're a championship contender necessarily, but just a team that's enjoyable, that competes hard, and that has guys that really care about winning every night. Like, that goes a long way with fans. And I think like you and I are on the same wavelength as a fan of like, we're both realistic fans. And I think that like, I pride myself as like a person that feels like I know basketball and being objective about everything, like even my own favorite team. So I feel like I can give you an objective opinion about Bradley Beal, like, and not have that attachment of like, oh, he plays for my favorite team. Like, I'm just going to tell you how it is. And I think that when you look at the team, you want to look at it objectively and also as a fan, and you want to be able to be like, objectively, like, we have a team that goes out there and gives a shit every night. And like, that's been enjoyable. And I think you can't argue that. And that's why when they have games like the Hornets game or the loss in Miami, I'm not mad about it, because it's like, we're getting more nights than not of them really playing their asses off, win or lose. And that's all you can ask for, in my opinion.
Yeah. They're not giving up like 40 point nights to guys that are like eighth men on bad teams. It's, you know, LaMelo Ball will be an all-star this year. Terry Rozier has like a puncher's chance at making an all-star game potentially. Like, you know, they're not scrubs. So I'm totally with you. All right, just to close us out here, they play tonight against the 3-16 Pelicans, Friday against the 6-11 Thunder, and then back to back, obviously going right the very next night against the 10-7 Mavericks on Saturday. So if you have to predict, you know, what's your guess on how they kind of break out over those three games?
Give me the second game again. You said Pelicans. What was it?
Thunder.
Okay, right. I think they'll win two of the three, and the two being the first two. So Thunder, Pelicans, and I think they'll lose to the Mavericks. The Mavericks just won last night against the Clippers. I think that I'm not a big Jason Kidd fan in terms of coaching, but I think Porzingis is really coming around. Mm-hmm. And I think that him and Doncic have made a more concerted effort to have chemistry, at least to try to like get on the same page, as I don't think they tried to in past years. Nope. Because I think they realize that they're kind of tied to each other at this point. No one's taking Porzingis off their hands right now. Anyway, that's a long way of saying, I just think that they're a really good team, and really good. Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm exaggerating. They're a good team. And I think that will be a tougher matchup for the Wizards. So I'll say two of the three.
I think you have to get out of here winning two of those three. I don't even know that it really matters which two of the three. Like old Wizards, it would have been lose to the Pelicans, barely beat the Thunder, but somehow beat the Mavericks.
You're right about that.
I'm with you. I tend to think that that's probably the toughest of the three. And Doncic really hasn't even been like that great overall to start the season, and is probably starting to trend in the right direction. So if you're going to steal one against them, this might be the time to do it. If there's a way to get out of there 3-0, I mean, that's huge. And I think everybody would be like going nuts again, about this team and its trajectory. If, you know, all of a sudden they're 14-6, but we'll take 2-1.
There's no excuse to lose to the first two teams. Like there's no excuse to lose to the Pelicans that don't have Zion. There's no, and they're 3-16 or whatever they are. There's no excuse to lose to the Thunder. Who knows if SGA even plays that game, because he's has some type of injury.
He's like, out for tonight for sure. So maybe Friday, who knows?
Exactly. So there's no, that would be unacceptable to me. Like if they lost either of those games, the Mavericks, I could totally understand. They have two all-star caliber players on their team. Sure. They have Luka, who's a top five player. Like that loss could easily happen. But the other two, I'd be mad about. Like I'd feel like that was old Wizards. There's no shame in, this is another thing, I'm gonna say this real quick. There's no shame in losing to the Hornets. Okay. I know we lost twice to them. The Hornets are a good team. Are they a great team? No, but you're gonna lose to good teams. Like LaMelo Ball is an all-star. Terry Rozier, like you said, puncher's chance to being an all-star at some point. They have Miles Bridges, who's probably the most improved player this year. Yeah. On the other side of Tyler Hero, maybe, so I don't know, like people get so up in arms about like these losses. Now, look, they're frustrating sometimes when you loot and drop the rope and you take an L. Like I get it. I get frustrated too, but the team is playing hard. The team is competitive. You can't lose to the Pelicans in the,
that's rough.
in the Thunder. But losing to the Mavs, there's no shame in that. As long as they're not getting ran off the floor, I think it just comes with the territory.
Wholeheartedly agree. Let's see where we end up after this. I don't know. Who knows? It could get squirrely. It's always weird around the holidays for guys and stuff too. There's a lot of extra travel involved for people who want to sneak home and see the family for a day or whatever. So yeah. Ryan, where can people find you? Give us the handles, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, my podcast is on a hiatus. As you know, Matt, I just had a child. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. My pod is just kind of on a hiatus right now, but at Ryan B. Oliver on Twitter. At some point, I will get back to the Hooping with Roe podcast. But for now, you guys got to check out Matt's podcast. You're obviously here. It's a great podcast, Matt. I always appreciate you. So I'm thankful for you. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate your friendship. You've always been supportive of me. Whether it's podcasting or personal, you've always been good to me. So I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, right back at you. Obviously, this will come out sometime on Wednesday for folks, but this is not an inconsequential ask to ask a new dad to take time right before Thanksgiving, an hour out of his time to do this. So I'm really grateful for you making time for it.
Yeah, the real MVP is my wife. So I won't even take credit. But I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, give her a pat on the back for me. We really appreciate that. Congrats to you guys both on the real off the court success there. So everybody, it's been another Believe in Wizards. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And hopefully we'll have more wins to talk about a week from now.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.